All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Wednesday, August 3rd. I'm Doug Norrie, and I'm here with Chris Durrell. Chris, how's it going?
It's going great today.
Yeah, we are here to talk. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about really today. We have a double slate of baseball. We have PGA going off tomorrow that Chris is going to get us tuned in on later on in the podcast. So we have, I don't know, more than enough to talk about, I think. We're from DFSR.com, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, if you like to type in all the words. We are here to help you make your lineups for baseball in DraftKings and FanDuel. Bunch of free content going up every single day. Plus, you can give a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by our good friends at Lineup Lab. You head over, you hit one button, calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, and you're all set for MLB, DFS, NFL coming very, very soon. So we're pretty excited about that. Like I said, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you are good to go. Chris, have you been playing DFS over the last couple days with baseball, and have you been playing Indians during that time?
Actually, I haven't. I've actually taken a couple days of baseball off. I was gone with the family all weekend, and so when I got back, I've been just sitting down preparing for yesterday all day, baseball today, and then the golf, which starts as well later tonight, early tomorrow morning. So I actually haven't, but I've been kind of scouring over the chat room, and it looks like it's been frustrating.
Lucky you, my friend. Lucky you, because it has been, I would say, you know, I'm not a big crying over spilled milk guy. Well, although my friends might say differently, but I like to believe that I'm not. That I don't really take too much time harping on things that have happened in the past. But these last 3 days have been really something in terms of our FanDuel has been. FanDuel lineups for us have been okay. They cashed easily last night, so I'm not really worried about there. But we've run into some of the sickest, I would say, bad pitching luck. Maybe some bad process along the way too. Because it was Bud Norris on Sunday, goes out, pitches a one-third of an inning, and leaves the game with something. Who cares? He's hurt. Salazar goes out on Monday and, I mean, just pitches what will undoubtedly be his worst game of his career, I would think. And then he's hurt, so he's out of 55 pitches. And then yesterday it's Carrasco, who likely pitched his worst game of his career today against the Twins. So it's really been something. And it was actually funny. This is the last thing I'm going to say about tomorrow because we're going to talk about Indians, or excuse me, yesterday. We'll talk about Indians later in the podcast. Even with a minus 12 from Carrasco and DraftKings, the lineups actually came somewhat close to cashing. It was like kind of unbelievable. Wow. Like it was one of those, if he had just maybe not played, like simply taken a zero instead of the minus 12, like if he just, I don't know, got hit by a bus on the way to the game or something, something like that, you know, slipped in the shower. I guess that was a little morbid. Maybe just slipped in the shower rather than get hit by a bus. But anything but a minus 12, just a simple zero, I think would have got it done. Anyway, that's my 3-minute little tilt session. Today's a new day in DFS. We're going to get to some Indians pitchers later. You wrote the picks last night. Let's go and talk about the early slate of games. I know 3-game slates for baseball are weird sometimes because baseball is already high variance, and when you add fewer decisions to it, it can become even more. So what do you think when you look at this 3-game slate that's the early one? It's Miami, Chicago, Milwaukee, San Diego, and then the Nats and the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I don't mind jumping in on this early slate a little bit today. There's obviously got Max Scherzer, so anytime you can get a piece of him, it's usually plus money. He's gone 6 straight starts, and I think 8 of his last 9 starts allowing 2 earned runs or less to opponents, and 1 earned run or less in 6 of those start. So he's got an elite K rate, and he's going to be in a good spot here again today. If you don't want to spend up for him, you can even go down a bit. Junior Garrick is going to be in a good spot as well if you're willing to pay up for him against the Padres in San Diego today. So there's 2 good pitching options out of the 3 games that I like. You can also go, John Lackey is always, the Cubs are going to be home favorites to Miami. So you've got some nice choice of pitchers in just 3 games, so it's nice that way. And then there's also some nice hitting as well. So how are you looking at the early slate today?
Yeah, I always like, personally, I'm a big elite pitcher guy, right? So, I mean, that's not like some kind of grand statement about about skill or anything, but I always prefer when I can look at lineups and get and look and have an elite pitcher with a high money line win expectancy like Scherzer. And that just, to me, just has so much implied safety to it. I know it's a funny thing with DFS, especially if you play every day. We hear this in the chat a lot, is well, Scherzer did this to me or he burned me in the past. It's just going to happen that a guy will burn you. Well, he's not burning you specifically, like personally, doesn't care at all about you. But the like a guy like Scherzer is so much better than the next best pitcher on the slate. And even though Lackey is pretty good and Guerra is, he's okay, I guess. The matchup is what helps him. But Scherzer is so much better than those other guys that for cash games on a small slate, I love being able to sort of lock in his K upside and the win expectancy with the money line and then just fit the bats in around it. It strikes me as such a high floor, especially when other people are going to talk themselves out of him because of the price. So that's kind of where I fall with him. And that's why I like – it's more of a FanDuel thing for me because I don't love the other start. I don't. It's hard to pair him with someone else on DraftKings. But that's kind of where I fall – that's kind of where I fall with the elite arms. Well, is that kind of the same line of thinking for you, or
For FanDuel, I 100% agree. He's your only pitcher if you're playing the early slate, unless you're trying to get cute in some GPPs and go a little bit contrarian. For DraftKings, like you said, it's kind of hard to fit two of those pitchers in and get some bats that you're going to like today in the early slate. So for DraftKings, you know they have the late. The late swap, so you can always go Max Scherzer in an all-day slate and mix him in with another pitcher in the evening slate that you like that we're going to talk about here in a bit, and just kind of monitor those lineups as they come out in the afternoon.
You know, that's a great point about the all-day slate. I've mentioned this before. I can't remember if I mentioned it on the podcast or if I mentioned it in the chat, but all-day slates sometimes provide a nice advantage when, especially, definitely on DraftKings where you can late swap, even on FanDuel where some of the early players are going to be over-owned because people want to just either A, they like the safety of knowing the guy's playing, or B, I know this is a thought that people have about DFS, it's like, well, I got to get some points early. I mean, points early, points late makes no difference.
It's the total in the end.
Exactly. But people will over-own players early because they just are staring at those guys early or just like want to sweat early, want someone to cheer for. So there's a lot of different reasons that I think you can get an advantage playing the all-day slate. And this is definitely, I think, one of them where you don't necessarily need to roster the bats early, but you can roster the Scherzer early and then take some flyers on guys late. So I don't mind the all-day slate from that point of view. From DraftKings, if you're going all day, I mean, the optimal lineups right now have Edwin Jackson in there at 4,700, so that's always makes me a little worried when I see something like that, but it's mostly just because it's loading up on the bats. Where do you see, let's talk just maybe, I don't think we need to go position by position for this three-game slate. Walk me through a couple bats that you like on this early slate. If you're building some cash games, like who would be a guy or two that you can see most likely being in lineups today? I mean, we don't have lineups yet, but let's just assume most lineups stay pretty historically the same as what they do, what teams do day over day. Who are some bats you can think about early?
For cash games, if I'm trying to fit Scherzer in, definitely going with Ryan Schimpf for the Padres. He's still very affordable. He had an awesome July, hit 9 home runs, and he had 18 RBIs in that time as well. He's red hot right now. We talked about liking Junior Guerra, but it's just hard to avoid. If Schimpf's hitting in that 2 spot for the Padres with that value, he just really helps you get up to the elite pitchers today. If I'm not going with the elite pitchers and playing some GPPs, I love the Cubs bats.
Yep.
The top four for your main bats, and then even the value with Contreras and Hayward and possibly even Russell way down at the bottom as well. But outside of that, maybe a couple shots with some Nationals. Bryce Harper, I'm not real sure about. You're going to want to check lineups and a little bit of news. I think we got some news articles coming out later that'll probably highlight a little bit on Harper's situation. For catcher, for me, it really comes down to Contreras or Ramos. Ramos is red hot. He's just a lot more money right now. Mm-hmm. And with Max Scherzer on the slate, Contreras is a real strong play for me. As well.
Yeah, Contreras' price on FanDuel is awesome, $2,900. Yeah. I don't think it's really hard to get away from that price over there. That's so cheap, sub 3,000. He could hit 7th, I think, and probably be in there for me. So it's going to be either him or Montero because, one of those two will catch. And, I mean, they both could play because Contreras will play the field, so they don't necessarily negate each other. They could both be in there. I'll have to wait to see what the Cubs lineup is. They do switch things around just enough that it's not totally certain what they're going to do on a day-to-day basis with their lineup because they'll give a lot of guys rest. I'm totally with you. Cubs, bats all the way. Harper was sick yesterday, so it's not an injury necessarily. I suspect he's back in the lineup today.
Yeah.
And And I mean, I've spent every single day talking way more about Bryce Harper than I ever thought I would. But he, for me, is a, if he's in the lineup, he's a total lock for cash games. Especially on, mostly just on FanDuel at 4,300. On DraftKings, you know, he's priced correctly on DraftKings at 5,300. He's incorrectly priced on FanDuel at 43. He's awesome. He has one bad stat. He has literally one bad stat this year, and it's BABIP. Everything else about what he's done this year is elite. It's only the BABIP that is non-elite, and that's just mostly, I would say, mostly a luck thing. So 4,300 for him on FanDuel, that's a, if he's in the lineup, it's a no-brainer for me. And I'm pretty much with you. Shimp, I like him. Dickerson, I don't mind if you need to save a little bit in the outfield. I'm hoping we get maybe one more cheap bat in there so we can do Cub, Scherzer, and Harper. We're going to probably need one other, like, in the 2,000 range hitter to fit all those guys. But I'm pretty confident when we get down to the end of it, those are going to be the things that you load up on cash games.
Yeah, 100% agree with you there. With Harper, that just blows my mind. I just kind of had a look here. Well, when you mentioned BABIP, he was 369 BABIP last year and 237 this year. That's like 130 points difference. Right. That is just mind-blowing.
I mean, some of that's the shift. Look, people are going to, like, turn this hot off because they're going to say this is, like, seven straight days that Doug's talked about Bryce Harper. But, like, I've just gone crazy about this. But it some of that's the shift, but the rest of it is just, I would say, just bad luck. The guy's been really unlucky, and then it clouds people's perception of what his true talent is. And his true talent is he's a top three hitter. And that's pretty much the end of the story. Let's move on to the late lineups before I lose people on my Harper filibusters.
Deal.
All right. Late lineups. It didn't strike me looking at it that there was the same. There's definitely not a Scherzer type. Well, there rarely is a Scherzer type. But especially here, there is not. I think the pitching is a little iffier on this later slate of games. It's 12 games going without one of those top tier pitchers. Let's go through pitchers first, though. And I think it's going to be interesting here, and there's going to be some people that are going to maybe do some puke in their mouth when we talk about some of these guys, but let's try to get through it here. Who do you see as, you know, the top two or three pitchers on this late slate for casher tournaments?
Yeah, it is a little scary for pitcher. I mean, you got Johnny Cueto and Chris Sale and Cole Hamels as your top three. I'm just looking at the DraftKings list here.
Right.
Cueto has a nice matchup in Philly. But he's going up against Nola, who does have some upside. And I believe Cueto got destroyed by Philly earlier in this year. He's kind of, you know, regressing a little bit from his early season numbers. Sale has a tough matchup against Detroit, who's red hot. And with the Indians struggling lately, Detroit's right back in the race. So that's going to be a tough matchup for Sale. Hamels goes up against Baltimore. I mean, they're red hot as well and got one of the top offenses in the league. So with my picks, I went down to value, especially with the Colorado game tonight in Coors. I really want to load up on the bats. So I got Trevor Bauer and Michael Wong as my two pitchers that I wrote about. And before anyone pukes in their mouth, like you said, just really comes down to, you know, opportunity and the price, Bauer's price right around that 8K mark on both sites. He's got a bit of K upside, over 8 Ks per 9. And the Twins, you know, even with the red hot start, they still only rank 18th in the year in WOBA, and they've got about a 22.5% strikeout rate versus right-handed pitching. So I he kind of makes sense, I guess. You know, if you want to, especially for me, who didn't play the last few days, who I don't really have that Indians Twins bias from the last couple days. So myself, I think I like Bauer a little more than you.
Man, that's funny. I'm really glad you said that. I actually said almost the exact same thing in the chat room this morning. Is I'm wondering how much. So this is the problem with DFS on the mental side of things, right? How much does recent performance for your bankroll affect your decisions on a given day, right? So like in a vacuum, Salazar and Carrasco's performance has very, very little to do with what Bauer is projected to do today. The only thing, I mean, so Salazar's nothing. He was hurt. Carrasco, so the only thing is, the only thing we're wondering is, are we incorrect about the Twins and their upside, right? Like, we pretty much know what Bauer is. So now we're asking ourselves, are the Twins a team that are going to put up 8 runs every day? Probably not, right?
No.
Right, exactly. And so it can fool you into thinking that's the case when you've seen your bankroll just get buzzed off by getting negatives from Salazar and Carrasco over the last couple days. But you put it perfectly. You personally did not have that happen to you. So you don't have that mental component. So you look at it just from an analytical point of view, And you're like, yeah, Bauer's a good play. And that is 100% the correct way to do it. Like, right? It's almost impossible to do it because you can't wipe away your memories. I wish we could, but we can't. And, yeah, so I think you put it perfectly. That's the case with Bauer today is he's cheap. He's a huge money line favorite again. Like, they're minus 180 or something like that. The Twins do K a lot. They do not have a deep lineup when they get past the four. I know they've hit well the last couple days, but overall they're not a very deep lineup. And I think I'm going to go back to the well again. I can't believe it. I think that's the correct thing to do. I think you need to take a bird's eye view of what the situation is, wipe the Salazar and Carrasco games out of your head, and look at it and say, no, this is still a good spot. The price is still cheap, or on the cheaper side, and this is sort of what we're trying to target at DFS.
Yep. You preach it every day is trust the process. So we can't really let yesterday's results affect today's decisions. So I 100% agree with you there is kind of wipe your memory clean. Men in Black stick, wipe it clean, roll on to Wednesday.
It's really hard. It's the single hardest thing to do in DFS, yeah. I think. If you don't have a system, it's nearly impossible to do. Like, you're not falling back on some kind of numbers, I don't think you can make good decisions over the long term just using your gut or whatever. But this is an interesting thing. So, and one other thing I wanted to mention about Bauer, someone mentioned Eden, one of our great chatters that's in there all the time, was mentioning how that we have Bauer projected higher than Sale today. And I was looking at it, I'm like, I think it's actually right. higher in raw points. You know, they're not too dissimilar pitchers. Sale's only striking out 8.5 per 9. Bauer's at right around 8.2. Same so they're thing. pretty close. Walks, Bauer definitely walks more. So he walks about a batter more in inning. Their xFIP is right in the same range-ish. Like Bauer's a little, definitely worse, but he's not 20% worse like the price would suggest. So that was one thing that was mentioned this early that, you know, kind of doesn't look correct when you're like, well, how is he projected more than this guy who's supposedly an elite arm? But I looked more into it. I'm like, okay, maybe it is correct. And plus, Sale's a dog at like plus 20 and Bauer's minus 180. So I think I'm with you. I think he's right now maybe the cash game play for the evening slate. I can't believe it, but I think so. You should make the case for Walker for me. He wasn't as much on my radar, but I know you wrote him up last night. I know we just spent forever on Bauer, but yeah, give me the Walker case.
Yeah, Walker wasn't really on my radar at the start. I kind of hemmed and hawed on my third pitcher. You know, I had a few guys in mind, Estrada versus the Astros who strike out, but they've been hot. I had Matt's in mind as well, but I ended up coming back to Walker. I just love his price, especially on DraftKings at only 6K. He just allows on a night when you're looking for bats, you can fit all the bats with Walker. He makes a great second pitcher if you're playing an all-day slate and you want to put Scherzer in there on DraftKings. He allows a lot of room that way to get him and some top bats, like you said. The thing that I like about him is he's going to be a favorite today. He goes up against Cincinnati, who that kind of scared me at first. But with Bruce out of town now, I mean, you only got Votto. Duvall hits some power against right-handed pitching in the middle of that lineup, but Votto's really the only bat that worries me against Walker today. And the Reds actually rank 25th in WOBA with a 22% strikeout rate against right-handed pitching. So with the price and, you know, putting all that together, he's really a high play for me tonight because I'm going to try and fit a lot of bats in.
And remember, too, and I know I've mentioned this before, but that WOBA stat is non-park adjusted. So they stink and they play in a great park. It's pretty hard to do. Like, it's pretty hard for the season to play half your games in the second best hitter's park in baseball and still be bad. Which just means, I mean, they're hitting there today, so they do have that advantage, but they are just not a good team. Billy Hamilton cannot do nothing but run fast. He doesn't get on base. Duvall, most people know at this point that I'm no fan of Duvall at all. I think that he's, you know, two home runs scraping over the fence from being back in the minors basically this year. So his upside to me isn't really there. I really like the lock-up play. I think you're going to need to load up on bats in some of these other games, especially in cores. Yeah, you've kind of sold me on that play, especially as a starting pitcher too on DraftKings.
And if you're scared of Votto, I mean, he walks like 25% of the time. Mm-hmm. That's a little high, of course, but just kind of exaggerating. But his walks aren't going to hurt you.
Yeah,
so you know, you pitch around Votto,
and that's what teams correctly do, right? They that's the one guy in the lineup you need to worry about. they really don't. Nothing else about their lineup really scares me on the whole. Especially you can run through that lineup pretty quickly a couple times and really not get burned. I mean, they have some long, like I said, Duvall does have long wall power, but for the most part, he's just a strikeout guy. Hamilton is not that good. So anyway, I don't need to belabor the point. What about? I mean, you made the case of Cueto at 11-9 on DraftKings. Can you see yourself pairing like Cueto and Bauer, or are you kind of just off Cueto because you think like the recent returns just aren't there for him?
No, I definitely see some merit in Cueto. I won't have a bunch of them tonight. I just really like the low-end guys myself, but they're minus 163 favorites. I mean, the Phillies are projected, I think, for only like 3.2 runs today, so he's going to be in a good spot. The Phillies lineup, again, is not a very scary lineup. Mikel Franco is very streaky, so, you know, you kind of go around him. They got some contact guys at the top, but nothing that really is going to scare me away. The result against the Phillies early in the year doesn't really scare me away that much. It's just one game, small sample size, so kind of wipe that away. Myself, I kind of like Steven Matsmore. I'm not sure exactly where he fits in the projections yet,
right.
But I just like that the Yankees are kind of giving up. Seems like they're giving up on the season. Mm-hmm. Not really playing for this year. They're rebuilding, so it could be a really good spot for the Mets.
Yeah, the Yankees are definitely a different team now. No Beltran in that lineup. They've just been sitting A-Rod. Back to Cueto for 1 second, and just speaking about that like recent performance from another pitcher informing decision, you know, Bumgarner really struggled yesterday. He let up 6 runs in like the first 3 innings. He was a huge chalk play. That's going to be in a lot of people's minds about whether or not the Phillies are good. A lot of those runs were unearned, so it wasn't totally Bumgarner's fault. But that game they put up like 21 runs or something like that in that game yesterday for a game that had a projected total of like 6.5. So that could inform people's decision on Cueto today. I'm still totally with it. I think that he has a nice floor because he doesn't walk a ton of guys. And they do have that money line in his favor. Mats, it's a little weird to project. This is the part of the season where it gets a little more difficult to project some things with pitchers, because when teams have overhauls or they just change what they're doing or players just switch teams, looking at what's happened historically over the course of the year isn't always necessarily accurate. Like, for instance, like the Mets are likely better against righty pitching now that Jay Bruce is on the team as opposed to what they had before. You know, the Yankees are likely worse against lefty pitching because Beltran's not there anymore. So it's just, it gets hard around now to make judgments about exactly where teams fit when they change their personnel. Our projections are low on Mats, but like I said, it could be partly because he is just, that's drawing maybe on sort of like what the Yankees were over the course of the year. Although I'm also actually realizing too, one reason it's probably low on Mats also is because there's no line in on the game yet. So
I just noticed that as well.
That comes through our feed. We model some off the Vegas lines. So that's defaulting to like an average game, which you could probably see his projection jump up over the course of the day.
Pretty much just because of Gardner, Ellsbury, McCann, and Gregorius. I mean, you got those 4 left-handed hitters. I think he can neutralize those bats. Really the only guy, you know, you got Tex and A-Rod. So we'll see where that goes for the rest of the day.
True. And Tex and A-Rod, I mean, those guys are kind of like dead. I mean, if you look at their numbers this year, their numbers are brutal.
They're not 2005 Tex and A-Rod anymore.
Oh my God, they're not even 2011. Those guys are just kind of dead men walking at this point. The Yankees are trotting them out there. It makes sense for the Yankees to lose on purpose, so I would keep playing those guys probably because they stink. And yeah, I don't know, just shoot for draft picks at this point. They did the right thing at the trade deadline by unloading all those guys. That was exactly what they needed to do. I'm no Yankee fan, but I don't know. I always applaud good decision making, and that was seen to me the totally correct decision making to just jettison all those guys. All right, we are going to be running up against the time here because we still have golf to talk about. Let's go through some of the bats. Hit me up with a catcher or two on this late slate that you can consider.
I don't mind Buster Posey's price, but if AJ Ellis is in the lineup tonight for the Dodgers in Colorado, that's who I'm going to be going with. $3,000 on FanDuel, $3,600 on DraftKings. Against Tyler Anderson. So he hits left-handed pitching well, and he gets a park shift. So he's the guy I'm concentrated on at catcher.
Yeah, you know what? I don't actually even mind. It's going to be funny for the system today. It likes on FanDuel, it's going to like Martinez and Cabrera too. I know they're facing Sale. Their prices are adjusted down for that pitching matchup. Like, V-Mart hits lefties better for his career just as a switch hitter. And he's only 2,800, middle of the order. Yeah. Sale's good, but he's like just, I mean, a lot of his numbers strike me as just a tick above you know, he's above average. He's not elite. I don't even targeting, you know, above average pitchers in DFS can be a dicey proposition because you can really run into a buzzsaw and just get, you know, and just get, I don't know, donked off by the Sale just pitching a good game. But 2,800 for V-Mart,
That's too cheap.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I can probably do it. 3,500 for Migne on FanDuel. I think I can probably do it. Give me another first baseman if you talk me out of that, though, because I'm not sure that's totally the correct way to go. So I don't know. Who do you like at first?
I'd like to pay up for Ortiz, but I don't think it's going to happen unless, you know, in a contrarian lineup where you're going against Coors.
Mm-hmm.
But Albert Pujols would be the guy that, you know, my top first baseman tonight against Graveman. I like the Angels definitely against Graveman tonight. If you want to save down, I wrote about Deho Lee if he's in the lineup again, hitting at the top of the lineup. And if you want to load up, again, if you want to load up on Rockies hitters, I think getting Deho Lee in there is going to give you even a little bit of upside along with the savings, especially on DraftKings. They're the same price on FanDuel and DraftKings. When you see that, I really like that DraftKings price.
Yeah, Lee's one of those guys. It's kind of like the Lee or Adam Lind situation. Like one of those guys will be in there for the Mariners, and they're both pretty much the same price. So I'm with you on being able to maybe roster one or the other against Porcello. So I think they're like an even swap. All you need to do is just check the Mariners lineup beforehand. I'm with you on Pujols. I'm actually hoping that Pujols maybe comes in. He and Cabrera are around the same price at first, and Pujols just strikes me as having, I mean, Pujols is clearly a worse hitter, but he's in a much better situation than McGee is. So, and the Angels have shown a little bit of life lately. They're still not a very good team, but I don't know. They don't strike me as bad as they were in the beginning of the season. They're showing a little bit. Marte, you know, looked good last night. Bandy looked good last night. So the Angels don't strike me as just that bottom feeding team they were from the beginning of the season. But walk me through. Let's go to second base. Second base, FanDuel and DraftKings, they look a little bit different for me. Can you stomach paying all the way up for a guy like Howie Kendrick today in Coors, or do you think you need to go a little cheaper?
I like Kendrick at Coors, but I'm pivoting off in most spots and going just paying up $100 more on FanDuel and about $400 more on DraftKings and going with Jason Kipnis.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been red hot lately in the last 14 days, even in the last month overall. His slash line in July, 330, 382, 600 with six home runs and a 163 WRC plus, and he's going up against Tyler Duffy today. Even with getting blown out the last 2 days, I believe the Indians have still scored 11 runs, so they're giving up a lot of runs, but they're still scoring runs at a pretty good clip. So I'll be all over Jason Kipnis tonight against Duffy, who's just been awful in his last three starts.
The Kipnis versus Kendrick thing is an interesting one. It's like, how much does Park affect your overall performance? Like, Kipnis is significantly better than Kendrick is in terms of just talent and the overall fantasy. But Coors gives you such a bump that it actually becomes closer than you would think. So it's just one of those things where ballpark, it matters. I'm always wondering if we're weighting ballpark correctly. It's one of those things that we spend a lot of time like regressing and making sure that like, do we have our ballpark inputs in there correctly? Because Kendrick and Kipnis, like I said, they're projected to hit around the same point in the order. But Kendrick is not very good, and Kipnis is very good. And so should ballpark make up all the difference? I'm just never sure. I think I'm with you that Kipnis strikes me as just safer overall, just from his skill set and just what he does. But it's a little closer to me. Is there a cheaper guy that you can – those guys are expensive. But is there a cheaper guy you can go to, or is that kind of it for you?
That's pretty much all it right. for me. It's one or the other.
I think so too. There's some guys down at the bottom, like the Neil Walkers of the world, but it's hard to get excited. Greg Garcia, if he could find his way back to the top of the lineup, though I'm not confident that will happen against the lefty today. So he broke my heart. Yeah,
play
by not playing.
Daniel Descalzo?
Nah, I'm not. I'm kind of off it. I don't think you need to go that direction for – he's going to hit lower in the lineup. So, all right, let's hit up shortstop. Walking through – who'd you write up here last night?
I wrote up Brad Miller, so I kind of went with the saving side. He projected well from a points per dollar perspective, so I kind of wrote about him. I like the matchup versus Volquez, who's been actually pretty awful on the road this year, and if Miller's in the two-hole again, I just think there's a lot of value in rostering Miller today. FanDuel, he's only 3,200. He's up there in price a little bit on DK at 4,300, But again, like I said, I just really like the matchup.
Yeah, I like what he hits at the top of the order. Shortstop, to me, there's not a ton jumping off the page. You get Seager in the lefty-lefty matchup, which really doesn't help him at all. Correa in the righty-righty matchup isn't great. This is a situation where it might be, you know, if Semien can get up to near the top of the lineup against Weaver, I don't mind it. But I like Miller, or I like probably just going as cheap as possible at shortstop and calling it a day. The position on the whole doesn't strike me as anything to really get excited about. Let's go to third base. A guy that comes up for a lot for us in terms of the complaint department is we've been projecting Alex Bregman pretty high for the Astros. He's been basically putting up an over since he got called up, and we get a lot of questions of why is Bregman still there? Why is Bregman still there? I see Bregman in the lineup. Why is he still there? You know, that kind of lineup, that line of quote, like, are you guys idiots? Why is Bregman still there? You get the point of people's thoughts on Bregman. My answer to them is, one, 35 or so plate appearances is nothing you can judge any player on, really. I could take a 35 plate appearance sample from just about everyone in the majors and make them either the best or the worst player ever. And that's just like just about everybody. So 35 plate appearances is nothing. He's a real prospect who the Astros seem committed to hitting second right now. Like, I don't know how long they're going to keep doing it because he is struggling. But if he's hitting second at 2,300 in that lineup, I just think it's fine. I'm fine doing it. Like I said, if it was just a random dude, like if it was just some random guy that the Astros had called up, and I'd be less inclined to do it. But like I said, Bregman is a real top tier prospect, and so. I don't know. I just know that question's coming down the pike. Why is Bregman still in optimal lineups? Did you write him up, or is there another guy?
No, I wrote up Machado.
Okay.
I feel he's the safest, even against Hamels. Just his price is just in. He's a really good hitter, and the price is just suppressed right now. Mm-hmm. I did write up Bregman. I won't play him on DraftKings at 3,600, but like you said, on FanDuel, 2,300 and a player hitting second. I'm not really worried about the small sample yet. As long as he's still in the two hole, of course, but just the opportunity he's going to get in that lineup hitting second, he's had good on base potential, you know, throughout his whole minor league career. So I think he's going to come around, and at 2,300, I want to be on him before he's 3,000.
Like I said, he's a 900 OPS guy in the minors, and minors are not the majors for sure, but, the Astros strike me as a pretty smart team, and smart teams don't just hit losers second, like when you're trying to win games. So that's kind of, I mean, almost default to their line of thinking in terms of this. So again, it's really hard to stomach seeing essentially like an over 34 to start your career. And I totally get it. But if you can get almost any two hitter, for 2,300 on FanDuel, you need to be pretty bad to not show up at least near the top of points per dollar. And Bregman, like I said, is not project. He doesn't project for his career to be bad. He's been bad now, but not for his career. All right, let's finish it off with the outfield. Are you looking Dodgers, Rockies stacks here? Because we, you know, for all the talk that we said about saving money to go to Coors, we haven't actually talked a lot about many Coors guys. who are some outfielders we can get behind here today?
Yeah, looking at the Coors slate, I wrote up Enrique Hernandez, Kiki, and if he's in there again against a lefty, he crushes left-handed pitching. Southpaws in his career, he's 406 WOBA and 162 WRC+. So I just like the opportunity there. I hope he's hitting a little bit higher in the order if he's in there. The other two guys that I like tonight, Mike Trout, of course. I talked about Pujols and targeting Graveman. Trout's right there for me too. Especially on FanDuel, 4,300. I really love that price. And then Matt Holliday as well, against the lefty Reed in Cincinnati, will be another one kind of in that middle. He's been struggling lately, but I think he's going to be low owned, high power upside against the lefty. And I think he's just going to be a good GPP play. I wouldn't trust him so much for cash.
Yeah, the Dodgers lineup is going to be the most interesting thing, what they do against the lefty. Like right now I have Kendrick batting first, but they could hit Hernandez up there. They've done it in the past. He's priced a little out of, you know, DraftKings did a much bigger price correction on Dodgers than FanDuel did. So FanDuel, like Scott Van Slyke, if he's in the middle of the lineup at 3,400, I'm kind of okay with. Hernandez definitely if he's hitting near the top. it's going to be interesting to see. The Dodgers lineup will be the probably the number one determinant of how the rest of the lineup shake down. Trout at 4,300 is almost a must play for me in cash games on FanDuel. He's just, that's a stupid price for him, frankly. It's just a 4,300 for the, you know, basically the best hitter in the game. Doesn't make any sense. It's going to be a play almost matchup independent. And then, yeah, I like the targeting some Angels. Cole Calhoun's coming in cheaper. This is a nice day to also play maybe, you know, the early slate and the evening slate, because you have some, you know, you have some value coming out both sides. And I'm with you on the Cardinals bats. They hit Piscotty leadoff last night, and if they were going to do that again against the lefty, he's another guy that I could see coming in there at 3,500 against Reed. So yeah, there's a bunch of interesting stuff today. I'm going to need to probably see how lineups shake out near the end of it.
And that's why I hate Coors slates, is it really comes down to the lineups in the Coors games that kind of sway you where you're going to grab your value and which top bats or top pitchers that you can pay up for. It really comes down. You really got to wait until the last hour, 2 hours before lineup lock.
Yeah, you really do. And that's actually, it's funny. This is a weird time of year too, because there's so many, call ups happening and teams have switched and there's guys showing up in lineups that haven't been there before. So it's making that lineup lock. I felt like the lineup lock over the last couple of days has sort of been like the NBA-ish kind of thing, where it's been, oh, who's this guy? You know, who's this guy hitting leadoff? And, you know, they've jostled things around. This looks totally different. This is a new team after the trade deadline. It had, like, that little bit of, like, NBA sweat type feel to it. Not in a good way. I hate that feeling. The NBA feeling of who's in a lineup is not good. And that's the way it's been with MLB. All right, so I think
it's going to work a little bit harder this time of year.
Yeah, you know, but it's important. That's what you have to do. You have to play DFS and to do it consistently. You need to take everything into account. And you can't just set your lineups at 5 o'clock and call it a night. You're basically dead money if you do things like that. So I really caution people to say, you know, try to get it right up there until lineup lock, make every decision, and monitor things throughout the night too. If you play DraftKings, you know, Harper was a late scratch last night. You can't miss stuff like that. And if you need to be sort of on it, like if you want, I mean, it depends what your goals in DFS are, but if you want to be long-term profitable, you need to treat it like a thing that you monitor all the time. Anyway, that's my another little diatribe. We're going to pivot here and talk some golf. This week, we're coming off the PGA Championship. We have the much smaller Travelers Championship starting tomorrow morning. I know you wrote up some golfers to look at here. Is this a situation where when you're coming off the major, are people still kind of on a golf high, or does golf fly a little more under the radar in a week like this?
I think it all depends on how much success you had the week before.
That's a good call. Yeah, you're probably right.
If you enjoyed the PGA Championship and you had some lineups at cash, you're probably all in again this weekend because the field, even though the field is it's a little condensed because of the Olympics, this tournament usually is held at the end of August, start of September, so it's kind of pushed in there with those two majors in 3 weeks. So normally the field wouldn't be that great, but to be honest, it's actually not that bad this week. 12 of the top 30 are here, so it's a fairly strong field. There could be a few guys that withdraw a little bit closer. Brooks Koepka was dealing with some ankle problems, but with the Ryder Cup stand-ins being so close, I think he's going to be really playing to get on that U.S. team. So I think it's going to be a fairly good week. The tournaments, of course, when you look at Millie Maker and come down to just a regular tournament, the tournaments aren't there for big prize pools, but there's still some nice, like the $3 birdie, the $3 three entry, the $33 tournament. So there's still some nice opportunities out there for sure. And then, of course, always with cash games as well.
All right, cool. So give me some golfers I can target here. What are some things you're looking at with this course? What are, you know, maybe some stats you're going to hone in on for some of these golfers today? What's going to be the important things to climb your way to victory for the Travelers?
For sure. So the Travelers Championship used the same course, I believe, since 1991. It's a TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut. It's just a par 70, and it's only 6,841 yards. So looking at some of the monster courses we've had to deal with the last few weeks, this is a pretty short one. So we can kind of open up our playbook to bombers, short accuracy hitters. Pretty much the whole field kind of opens up for this one. It's a peat dye design, so I kind of look at guys that do good on peat dye courses, because there are quite a few throughout the PGA Tour. You got Sawgrass, the Ocean Course at Kiawah Island, Harbortown, which is the RBC Heritage. We've got Crooked Stick and Whistling Straits, which play some majors. The TPC Louisiana, and then this TPC River Highlands. So a couple guys that do well in these peat dye courses that rate well would be Bubba Watson at the top, Matt Kuchar, Luke Donald, Jim Furyk, Brandon Grace, just to name a few. Some of the stats I'm looking for this week, it's not going to be like weeks past where you're looking at minus five, minus six kind of scores. You're going to need probably a minus 15 to minus 20 to score here. And with there being 12 par fours, par four scoring and birdie or better percentage are two of the biggest ones I'm looking at this week, along with some of the strokes gains metric, especially approach shots. You're going to want to hit a ton of greens to give yourself those birdie chances. And the greens are a little bit slower, so it kind of brings your bad putters back to the field. So it really opens up the field. This is a good tournament. I mean, there's a ton of choices to go with.
It's really interesting to me, too, about looking at course designer as a comp across, like a statistical comp across, like, sort of the
yeah.
field. I don't think a ton about golf anyway. So, I mean, what I don't consider is the list is long for golf. But that is really interesting thing to me that, you know, if there's similarities between how a course was designed and this person has designed lots of courses, then hell, why not look at some of the other success rates that you've seen across those? And because one course comp seemed to be that the sample would be so small, but if you can look across the whole field, yeah, I find that to be really interesting.
It's an interesting way to get a larger sample size of a player's performance. Just because you only play on a course once per year,
right.
Sometimes once per, you know, every 3 or 4 years. Yeah, so, yeah, getting a course designer, which in most cases the courses are fairly similar across the world for that one designer. So if you can grab a little bit larger sample size, you can get a better key on guys that do well in those courses. And it's funny because Kuchar is one of those guys who doesn't really contend at a lot of other tournaments except for the Pete Dye courses.
Really?
You get a guy like Jimmy Walker who does really well in Florida and Texas and then kind of fades away the rest of the year. So seeing him win this major last weekend was really awesome to see.
All right, that's awesome, man. I find that's fascinating. So with that in mind, who are, you know, a top one or two golfers that you're taking a look at this week?
Right at the top, I'm paying up for Bubba Watson this week for sure. He is in the Olympics, so he's actually given up the opening ceremonies to come to this tournament. He's committed to this tournament. He's came here, I think, every year. It's been like 8 straight years. He missed the cut his very first year, but he's made 8 straight cuts here. He's won here twice, 2010 and 2015. And the fact that he's given up that Olympic opening ceremonies to come back here just shows me that he's going to be here. He's going to be ready to play. And he's also, I believe, just outside the cut line for the Ryder Cup standings, which will be after the Olympics as well. So I just think he's going to be putting 100% effort into this week, and he's going to be at the top of the leaderboard for sure. He hits on a lot of the stats, too. Going down a little bit, if you're looking for a guy with some nice course history, maybe hasn't been playing as well, he could be a little bit chalky depending on which way people go, is Ryan Moore. He's got 3 top 10 finishes, 2 top 5s in his last 4 tournaments at the Travelers, so he would be my other pick.
Sounds like your daughter's got PGA thoughts too. All right,
yeah.
And it's all good. We're family guys, so we try to keep it real in these podcasts. I got a gardener blowing my ear off in the background here. You got your daughter. We're guys that are just talking sports that happen to just record it and send it out there into the ether to have people listen to. If you want Chris's or his daughter's thoughts on PGA, all you have to do is head over to the site, and he's got his article up there that breaks down a bunch of golfers. He's also got cheat sheet and lineups for sale, $5 each. If you just want a little weekend sweat on the Travelers and you don't want to put too much thought into it and you want someone else to put the thought in for you, Chris has done that. He's broken down a bunch of golfers, a bunch of different stats. You know, you've heard him walk through some of his process on course history and, you know, course comps, which I think is the deep dive that we're looking for when we're trying to break down DFS stuff. I think that's great, man. Yeah, Chris, any final thoughts for PGA, for baseball, or are we good to go?
We are good to go.
Yeah.
Bring home the money.
There we go. Guys, DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. You head over to the site. PGA stuff is up there. MLB content is up there. All the free stuff you could want. Jump in the chat room. Ask some questions. I'm around there most of the day answering stuff, talking, just trying to figure out the landscape. And then you also grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Helps you one button calculate optimal lineups for MLB, FanDuel, and DraftKings. NFL coming very, very soon. Really excited about that. All right, Chris, man, I will talk to you later on in the week. It's been cool, brother. Good luck today.
Cheers.